Hello and welcome to the Local Economic Development Podcast.
Hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Starmer.
For other programs in this series, please take a look at www.ledcast.net.
In this episode of the LEDcast, I'm going to have another conversation with Colin Mitchell. Hi, Colin.
Hi, Jörg. Welcome back to South Africa. Much better here than in Germany at this time of the year, I guess.
Also raining, but at least here it's 10 degrees warmer, that's true. What we want to talk about today is a very nice, very practical little tool, Colin, that you have been using in a couple of workshops recently, namely asking people what they are mad, glad, and sad about. You just quickly want to explain how that idea hit you.
Yeah, firstly, I can't claim that it was an original idea. I'm absolutely sure that somebody told me about it somewhere along the line. I just can't for the life of me remember where. I also have a feeling that Sean Cunningham was involved in it somewhere along the line, but that's another story. The background of Mad, Glad, and Sad was we often find ourselves working in less sophisticated environments where the concept of a SWOT analysis tends to either become a technical process or an abstract process where people really can't relate to the concept of internal strengths and weaknesses and external threats and opportunities. In many cases, it's just far too abstract for them. So we've kept trying to do it. We've kind of had mixed successes with it. And in this case, what we did was we tried to think of some way that could relate more to people at an emotional, practical level where they could really think about those things that affect them on a day-to-day basis.
So that is how you came across these three issues. What makes you mad? What makes you glad? What makes you sad? How do you introduce that in a workshop setting?
Well, we use the same techniques that we would have used with the normal MESO card system. We would use that, but we would introduce each of the topics separately. And the trick here is to be fairly creative in the way you, in fact, introduce the concepts. You need to convey the level of emotion and the level of excitement that goes with it. For example, when you say to a bunch of people, you know, when you think about your environment, what is it that makes you mad? It's pretty much not going to work. But if you really put emotion to it, and sometimes you even use a little stronger language, it tends to get people to relax. It tends to get them to laugh about things. And especially if they're working in small groups, they tend to feed off each other with regard to those things. And it creates quite a lively sense of debate. So you would handle, normally you would say, what really makes you mad? And what I sometimes do is say, what really, really pisses you off? First of all, there's some shock value in it, and that causes people to firstly take stock. But then once they get past that, it really then gets them to think about all the things that have really been upsetting them. It is best, I must admit, it's best to do it in small groups, because else you would just have a flood of cards, some of which become kind of puerile, if you like, but in a small group, they talk about those things and it becomes relevant to them. And those things handle the weaknesses pretty much of a community. You are then going to the issue of glad. And again, it's, you know, you would ask the question, why, you know, if you're still here, if this area is struggling or you feel there's a need to improve things, why are you still here? What has kept you here? What is it that really makes you feel that it's this place you still want to be? And that very much handles the issue of glad. And people think about it, and they start finding out things about their area where they had probably stopped even thinking about. Fundamental things about the way their society works, the environment they live in. And that invariably is the second thing you should do. The last thing you need to do, really, and it is the last thing, it's about sad, because the question of what makes you sad often overlaps into mad. By this I mean the things that make you mad are often an offshoot or a derivative of the things that fundamentally make you sad. And again, the way to pose that question is, if you think about your community, you think about this environment, and you think about its long-term future and the way things are going, you tend to raise the issues to a slightly higher level and make people think more of a broader concept. You'd say, what is it that makes you sad? That then really covers for, in the SWOT analysis, it covers for the long-term threats of a region.
So when you look at the responses that you typically get to the three questions, is there anything like a consistent pattern? Is there a couple of typical answers that you would expect, or is there a huge variety depending on the place where you conduct this exercise?
From the experience, and quite frankly, I've only used it on three occasions in the last few months. The issues that make people mad are pretty much the generic common issues that are often raised in the newspapers that people are talking about most. So those are the issues that will make you mad, but that will lead people into thinking about how they would be able to respond to those issues of mad. It's no point in just being mad if you're not going to do something about it. And that would then cause people to think that the sad and the glad would tend to create opportunities to overcome those issues. What we do find, especially in South Africa, is the mad issues are often around societal problems, the way people are behaving towards each other, the way they're in fact behaving to the environment in general. And the crime issue, obviously, is an issue in this country that everybody's talking about, and that should be addressed. The sad, again, there's often the issue of people clinging to a perception of a better past and that things are not going the way they would have hoped. And in another context, the sadness comes about the fact that there's still fragmentation. So it's pretty much consistent stuff. But what it does allow, it does focus attention. And then the first case I did, mad, glad, and sad on its own. And I didn't try and use them any more than that. What we did the second and the third time is we used the Pareto principle. But we didn't do it in each category of mad, glad, and sad. We did it overall. And that was interesting because one would have expected the high priority to be on the things that made you mad. That didn't turn out like that at all. The highest priority turned out to be on the things that you were glad about, which then led straight into an opportunity of what you could do in order to start changing those things that made you mad and also to find a way of preempting those things that were likely to make you sad in the future.
I was just thinking about the science behind the sequencing of the three items. And after listening to you, it actually does make perfect sense to me. What I would suspect is that with the mad question, well, you're kind of picking up the people in a nice way, inviting them to really ventilate their frustration. And what I would expect is that very often people then say, ah, finally somebody is asking for that. What I wanted to tell somebody for a long time is I'm really mad about this and that. Then with the glad question, you are kind of generating more positive energy. And with the sad question, you're probably taking people in the direction towards, well, coming up with practical ideas to do something. Because I would suspect that often the sad things are things that people are sad about because they are actually quite silly. It's not like it's a major issue to solve something, to address something. It's just that you need to take the initiative. And you can then probably take such a workshop where you run this exercise as a starting point to address a couple of very practical issues.
Yoga is very much the case. Using the mad as the first thing immediately gets people into an emotional framework. You immediately see the issues pop up. You immediately see the conversation. And your issue about, you know, at last somebody's asking that question is very real. As for the sad, they're more about issues of principle, issues about values, and things that people feel deeply about. And if you end up feeling that the major issues that are raised under the question of sad, if those were addressed at a fundamental level, a lot of the things that people are mad about would just disappear. So it does give you very quick wins with regard to stuff that needs to happen right now, which are silly things that make people mad, like litter and like broken streetlights and service delivery. Those are things that people can very quickly understand that need to be addressed. The sad issues are issues around societal problems. Those are longer term, but the discussion just brings people closer and realize that probably they're not really that far apart on many issues.
Do you typically take the people in a workshop like that into brainstorming on practical activities?
We have done that. It's not often necessary. We found that in two of the cases we did that just in order to get people onto the same plane, same mindset as to what we were doing and where we were going. In one case, we did use it in a more practical example in order to find out exactly what we could and should be doing about it. And in that case, we asked people four simple questions. I think what's important to note here is that this is probably the earliest type of intervention you'll make in a community which has just started to think about local economic development or systems change or doing something differently because they're struggling. So you wouldn't really lead into even PECA or Genesis for that matter. It's too early for that. But the question we asked after that was, we said, okay, if you were thinking about what you would like to do, we asked you to organize your thoughts into four categories. The one, those things that we need to drop or stop doing right now. Those things that we are doing that we need to change. Certain things that we are doing that we think we're doing right, that we must improve and do better. And then new things you introduce, things that we possibly haven't even thought of yet that if we do them, might start process of change. And again, that's a kind of structured way of organizing thought, and it does tend to cause people to consider all their options.
Oh, interesting. I mean, that's also a very interesting way of organizing brainstorming and generating ideas about practical activities. Looking back at your experience and more generic experiences, is there anything that can possibly go wrong with this kind of format?
I'd hate to say that there's never anything that can go wrong, because that's definitely going to bite you at some stage. But in general, I find it a very, very safe environment. You're not introducing any issues to the debate. All the issues are surfacing. There is always tension around some of the things, especially in South Africa. But doing it this way, the fact that they're writing the issues on cards and they're not having that level of discussion amongst themselves, because you try to discourage that. It doesn't allow the conversation to deteriorate at a local level. You may well find that one thing that makes somebody mad at another level might have made somebody quite glad. But the fact that you're using the card methodology does take a lot of the potential for problems out of play.
So how would you do it practically? You would organize people into small groups, and then each small group would discuss amongst themselves and then come up with a couple of cards, and that would control for kind of outlying statements or outrageous statements. But also each group would be people who probably know each other, who sit next to each other because they know each other anyway, so they wouldn't have a problem communicating with each other.
What we did do is we, in general, when people come to a workshop, we try and arrange them in small groups of about a minimum of five, maximum of about seven people at a table. When people do arrive, instinctively they seem to sit in little homogeneous groups where they bring support. We immediately shake that around, and we use a little bit of a game where we get them to line up in a certain way, and then we number them off, so they end up sitting in completely different groups. We also, by doing that, we then also ask a question that allows them to introduce themselves to each other in such a way that they kind of breaks the ice. And we would ask them to think of one thing about themselves that they find pertinent to the fact that they're at the workshop in the first place, which also causes people to think a little bit differently and to consider other people. So we have done that. But in the small groups, once they've reorganized themselves and introduced each other, we don't ask them just to use a shotgun approach to everything that makes them sad. We would typically, in a workshop of under 40 people, we would ask them to think of three or four things that make them most mad or most glad or most sad. And then and when we aggregate the cards, we don't take all the cards from one table and put them up. We would get some person to lead. And what we do is we create some spontaneity about it, where we would get the first five cards up and we'll say, okay, what else makes you sad? And we'll cause a mini riot where people shout from the background, and it creates a very lively environment.
So what you say is that you're not very rigid. You're applying this format in a very flexible and very interactive way, and most of all, what you're trying to do is to create kind of, well, it's to some extent an emotional, but a very constructively emotional atmosphere at the workshop.
Yeah, I guess that's quite an important point. I hadn't thought about it. But typical of many of the Meso Partner type tools and things we use, they are flexible and they can be used intuitively given certain circumstances. I think any experienced facilitator would very quickly test the mood of the people that are there, and you would you would end up probably intuitively tailoring the way you do things to suit the mood as you perceive it.
Okay, Colin. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. And I would like to invite other people who use this format to also share their experiences with us by putting some comments onto the comment site that is indicated at our website at www.ledcast.net. Thanks, Colin, for your time.
Thanks, Jörg, and wish you a very good Christmas back in Germany, and hope to see you early January when you run away from the snow again.